radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
The Air Vacuum Corporation is proud to sponsor the following podcast on fire grant assistance. Over the past decade, Air Vacuum Corporation has been assisting fire departments and EMS facilities with removing engine exhaust emissions from within the workplace. Our revolutionary AirVac 911 system is fully automatic, highly affordable, and attachment-free. For more details about our products or for assistance with your upcoming grant request for engine exhaust removal, please click on any one of our featured banner ads or visit our website directly at www.airvac911.com.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Peter Matthews, and we're here today with Brian Vickers, the Firehouse.com grants contributor. We're here to look at the 2010 Assistance to Firefighter Grant Program, which opened on April 26th. The podcast is filled with some information to look at the new guidance for this year and also to help you better navigate the changes and the process of grants at the federal level for the fire service. The grant program opened April 26th. It closes on May 28th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this year's program is maxed out at $390 million, which is a pretty significant decrease from last year. So it's important to listen to the podcast, read the guidance that's at firegrantsupport.com, just to make sure that you help your department and your community become as eligible as possible for the funding available. So, Brian, thanks for joining us, and we appreciate the help as you do every year with us. And can you kind of give us a feel for what's changed since the 2009 program?
Well, we had a couple other programs stuck in there, which kind of bounced the 2009 grants around a little bit for AFG. You know, of course, the station grants, which were a big help and a definite need, nowhere near funded the way it needed to be at $210 million, but it, you know, like any grant program, it beat $0. That was kind of thrown together as part of the stimulus bill last year, and had to get an application period in there, a review in there, and a lot of people don't realize it's the same DHS staff running station grants, fire prevention, SAFER, and of course AFG. So they're definitely taking a load on, and it does take a lot of time getting everything through, as it usually does. So our awards in AFG didn't really start until December 2009, and they're still continuing now. There was, of course, the SAFER changes. They changed that program a little bit, allowing rehiring of open positions and layoffs. And they changed it from a five-year down to a three-year program, 2 years of no matching, and for new positions, 100% matching in year three, and then it was over with as far as the period of performance was concerned. Rehiring was just 2 years of 100% matching from the federal government, no obligation past that. So definitely bounced it around a little bit, and certainly a lesson in, you know, what we've been saying since I think the beginning of when we first started the podcast here, that, you know, everybody's got to be ready with their information in hand and be flexible, since nothing is official until the guidelines come out. The SAFER changes did catch a few people. A few people we work with that couldn't make the match, 100% match that early in the game, so they had to bow out, and a lot of other people had opened up the possibility since they were allowing rehires. It used to be in the past, if you had laid anyone off in the prior year, you had to rehire those positions, or same thing, if you had vacant positions, you had to fill them first before you go after a SAFER grant. And a lot of those were changed. A lot of people couldn't react quickly enough, but also a lot of people, the guidelines weren't completely clear on what was expected, so they ended up extending the application period in about another 30 days into January instead of ending before Christmas. So, but as you mentioned, the biggest one for AFG that's changed since last year has been the recommended cut in the funding to AFG. It goes down to $390 million. As you mentioned, it was about $565 last year, so just about a 25% cut. So it's not a good change, but there's some hopefully better ones coming in the future, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay, and you know, for this year's programming, what are some of the priorities that have changed, you know, during the process?
Hasn't been too much specific since last year that's changed. They did add, for EMS agencies that are applying, they did add a separate budget line for EMS billing income, since that's usually a decent portion of any EMS transport agency's revenue stream. So to be able to take that apart and see, you know, what's tax-based, what's, you know, what's billing, because anybody that's familiar with that knows that Medicaid, Medicare, and all the insurance companies are requiring more and more care and different drugs and things along those lines for both BLS and ALS care, and are either paying the same amount that they have in the past, or they're not approving payments, and, you know, revenues are going backwards.
Okay.
So that's certainly something that EMS agencies want to pay attention to, is where's your revenue stream been going, just like fire departments want to make sure, you know, if you're fundraiser tax-based, you want to make sure that, you know, you capture that information. And the only real major change they've done was they changed the station modifications, which has only been exhaust systems, monitored fire alarm systems, sprinkler systems, and backup station generators. They rearranged those categories where sprinklers and the monitored alarm system are the basically tier one priorities in those categories. Exhaust removal solutions are tier two, and backup generators are basically tier three, which essentially is not going to be funded. You know, basically what they're saying there is that there's other outlets for generators if they're that needed, whether it be federal surplus or otherwise. Their main priority is, you know, if we're going to take the lead as a fire department like we're supposed to and preach fire prevention and proper care, then we need to make sure our stations are protected with sprinklers and, of course, alarm systems. I think the past couple of years are averaging between 10 and 15 stations catch on fire, most of them totaled. So we sprinkler systems, we know how well they work. It's definitely a priority in that category to get the station retrofitted, especially since it's been a requirement in newer stations per NFPA since 2003, I believe, is when the NFPA 1500 included that.
Okay. The training, you know, training has always been a big thing for departments to put in for a variety of different pieces of equipment, and with budget cuts across the country this year, training divisions and fire prevention bureaus are taking a hard hit. So how is this year's program going to affect the training divisions?
Well, a nice thing they did stick in 2009 was they started asking what people's level of compliance is with both Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2. Recognizing that just because you get a piece of equipment doesn't mean anybody knows how to use it. You know, myself, I haven't been an officer and a training officer, you know, I fully believe you got to know what you're doing before you even get there, and that comes through training. But also, having been in the computer industry for a long time, just like fire prevention and training divisions are the first ones cut, you know, IT departments were always the first one cut, yet that's the one that everybody says they need for ongoing and everyday support. So they have bumped training up in priority, especially if anybody's not getting the opportunities to go train. The tuition for classes is eligible. Costs for bringing instructors in to teach the classes is eligible. And there's varying priorities. Self-taught classes don't tend to rank too high, or, you know, so-called distance learning. Anything done has to be towards, you know, a state certification or higher. Is the goal. You know, whether anybody believes in the certification system or not doesn't matter. We've got to have a litmus test for whether or not the training was effective and appropriate, and that's, of course, the certification system. So they put the emphasis on that. So it's whereas in the past we always talked about shopping lists, asking for too many different things at once, training was considered one of the other things that was medium to lower priority in the past. But for those that need it, it's been brought up in priority in a right case, and it's not as much of a shopping list item as it has been. So especially if departments are wanting the training, not having the capabilities to get the training, you know, train-to-trainer courses are good, instructor-level certifications, because certainly that's the most cost-effective way to bring training to the entire department, is have members that are certified as instructors to give out the state or national certs, you know, so we can go after the training manuals, DVD systems, anything along those lines to make sure that everybody's ready to do the job before we even go out there. You know, but in, that's been the only major change on that side. You know, bunker gear, personal protective equipment for your primary mission is still the number one priority. So for structural fire departments, that's still going to be structural bunker gear. Air packs are still going to take number two, and things kind of filter from there. I mean, just about everything we could use is eligible, from rescue tools, hose, and things along those lines, all the way up through radios and communications, mobile data terminals. They haven't changed the eligibility for regionals. It's still water supply related items, as in large diameter hose and appliances, can be done as a regional. Training can also be done as a regional, and then of course the communications, whether they be the radios, the pagers, or the MDTs, or upgrading the dispatch center consoles with CAD systems and the like, are all regional possibilities. And we always encourage everybody we work with, and you know, certainly everybody listening, since we still can, since 2007, we've been allowed to put in an individual equipment grant, an individual vehicle grant, and the host a regional grant, when those, you know, mutual aid departments or others in the area also have some needs that can be taken regional, do it as a regional application, increase the likelihood of funding. Regionals score a lot higher in terms of interoperability than individual grants, because if everybody's in the same application together working towards the same end goal, if funded, obviously interoperability is going to be achieved. Plus, that way it also doesn't bump the opportunity to ask for something individually on the side and take advantage. Project design this year is going to be more critical than ever because of the cut from funding. You know, we haven't seen this little funding since 2002. I believe it was $360 million, and ever since then up until this year, it's been over $500 million. So, you know, we're looking at 25% less available money. A lot of the designs we were looking at, you know, in terms of the shopping list, some departments that maybe could have been competitive in 2009 for asking for air packs and a breathing air compressor to go with it might not rank this year. It might have to pick just that one single thing, either go with the packs, go with the compressor, you know, don't mix a whole lot like maybe we could have gotten away with in the past just because there was more money available. I mean, certainly the more money that's available, they've got a lot longer way to go down the awards list in terms of scoring. When the money gets tighter, the projects have to get tighter to score higher. And for those that were turned down last year, you have to look at that design. Did we ask for too many things at once? And even, as I said, asking for two things can be too many. But we have talked to a lot of people that you know, DHS is offering, if you fill out the form, they'll send you a copy of why you might have been turned down. And they did this before. But I want to encourage people not to wait for that reply to come in. The denials were sent just you know, a week and a half ago on the 16th of April, and they said it could take up to 30 days to find out. Well, we've only got 30 days left in the application period. People might not get their answer, and if it's similar to what was done in the past, which is a step up but still not that great, all it was a reference to sections of the guidelines talking about why an application, you know, priority goes to, you know, those with a higher call volume or those with fewer vehicles of the same type, and, you know, phrases like that is what was pointed out in this explanation letter, which a lot of people got and said, you know, kidding, we kind of figured that. But everyone has to remember that these denials are comparative, not literal. Just because it says you're lacking in one category or all categories The way it words those letters is the phrases are all stuck in the computer in the database. When they run the denials, it compares that application score against the average of those that did get funded and makes a comparison. If it's lower, it uses the term lacking. Could have been half a point too low. You know, so it's not like it was completely terrible. You know, we don't want anybody to just take their denial, think their entire application wasn't any good just because it got turned down. Look at it, talk to some other people that maybe got funded, you know, go to our past podcasts, past articles here, and look and see, is there something that can be done to tighten it up? Maybe taking that, you know, one extra thing back out of the application might make the difference. Maybe explanations weren't too clear. And certainly, you know, look at what has changed in the last year and make updates to the application. You know, has any other calls happened, any close calls, any major repair bills, any issues like that that would help beef up the case are certainly things you want to take into consideration when turned down. And also, you know, if funded, a lot of people just tend to take the same narrative, change a couple sections for the new project, and put it back in. We've got to remember to make updates everywhere as possible. But really, you know, take the time. Like I said, it's going to be a lot tighter this year. You know, the other, we can't rely on the change they did make in terms of the money. It's always been in the past that volunteer and accommodation departments are guaranteed, you know, at least 55% of the funding because they cover 55% of the population, and career departments could get up to 45. And now it's still that. Career departments can get a maximum of 45%. All volunteer departments make up about 22% of the coverage. They're guaranteed at least 22% of the funding, and accommodation departments are guaranteed at least 33% of the funding. So they could certainly get more if the score is warranted. You know, history has shown that career departments don't tend to ask for as much money just because, you know, when you're in a municipal setting, they may not get approval of the mayor or the council or whoever for the matching money to even apply in the first place. So they're minimums, but it's still trying to be fair and spread as much of the money around the areas as possible and make sure nobody gets completely shut out in terms of a type of department or, you know, type of area served. So
okay.
It's still one of the most highly rated grant programs the federal government has.
Absolutely, and as you'll hear in, you know, the second part of the second podcast that we do in this series of two, we'll talk with several departments who have been fortunate enough to win one or more of the awards and how it's had a dramatic impact on their department. So let's take a quick break here, Brian. We'll get a quick word from our sponsor, who is Air Vacuum Corporation. We appreciate the sponsorship of this podcast, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
The health and safety of all firefighters and EMS personnel should be a high priority for every department. At Air Vacuum Corporation, we believe that this starts with the removal of engine exhaust that is released within your facility on a daily basis. Our revolutionary AirVac 911 systems operate automatically 24/7 to remove these emissions without any hands-on operation or hoses to connect. For a free proposal and site evaluation, please click on any one of our featured banner ads or visit our website directly at www.airvac911.com.
Welcome back to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is the podcast looking at the Assistance of Firefighter Grants Program with Brian Vickers, the Firehouse.com Grants Contributing Editor. We neglected to mention earlier firegrantsupport.com, the website where you can view the tutorials and get all the information and resources that you need to supply or to admit for this year's grant. So, Brian, what are two things that every grant writer or the program submitter should know or do to help enhance their chances of winning?
Certainly, the big one, as you just mentioned, you know, visit the website for the program, take any tutorials they have. They're going to go through everything between what's eligible, what's not eligible, requirements for funding. then download the full set of programs guidance materials and read it front to back. I've done it even before I took this on as a full-time occupation, just because that's a responsibility. You want to make sure you don't make, our goal in life as humans is not make dumb mistakes, but not going all the way through and missing something, since these programs are annual. You only get one shot a year to do it. We want as much information as we can get about what the program's looking for to make sure we capitalize on that. And once that's done, certainly go back, look at yourself as an applicant from the inside and the outside. Everybody kind of has that tunnel vision. We say, we need this, and that's it. They get focused on that one thing. But maybe reading the priorities. Is there something else that may score higher? Is there something else that there's a better argument for? I've got to take an objective look, because the long-term goal of a grant is to make a long-term improvement to whoever the grant program gives money to. So they're not looking for quick fixes. They're looking for solutions. What is really going to make the biggest impact and, bring the department, bring the organization forward and more progressive in the mission they serve. And then take a look from the outside. Talk to other departments in the area. Read some of the forums. Read some other articles. See what other people have done in similar situations. And also see, how are they set up in terms of funding, stations, and equipment, and see how you compare a little bit to your organization, to their organization, and see, are you lacking in some areas? Are you not lacking in others? Or, as compared to them, because other departments are the other applicants that you're working against. It's the same pool everybody goes into for the, projects. The only split there is that the vehicles do not compete for the equipment money, and vice versa. 25% of the maximum goes to trucks, 75% goes to equipment. So everybody asking for equipment goes in against everybody else asking for equipment. So it being a competition, we've got to make sure everything is bulletproof, and you learn as much as you can about your organization and the others to be able to plead your case and make sure that your project is going to be a strong one.
Okay. Looking forward to 2010 and beyond, what are some of the things that we have to look forward to, not just with Assistance Firefighter Grant Support, but the other grant programs?
Well, SAFER will be a little delayed. They just started the awards for 2009 because that didn't close until January. That money was doubled this year, said unfortunately at the expense a little bit of AFG. Some of the money that would have gone to AFG has gone into SAFER. So that's up to $420 million. As I mentioned earlier, it did change from a five-year obligation for hiring personnel to a three-year obligation. 2 years of 100% matching money from the government, and the third year on new positions would be 100% local money, and then it's over at the end of year three. Ideally, they would like to see you keep everybody past year three, but it is not required as part of the award performance to do that. As we did mention, rehiring vacant positions, rehiring layoffs within a 16-month span. It was January 1st, 08 to October, end of October, 2009. Any positions that were laid off in that period of time, retirements that caused vacant positions that people weren't allowed to fill, those were now allowed to be applied for as a rehiring project, which was just 2 years of 100% matching from the government, no third-year obligation. That is going to be continued for 2010 as well. And, of course, on the other side of that is the recruitment retention projects. We worked with a lot of departments this year that never realized that some of the projects that could be done as recruitment retention, because all they saw was the SAFER, figured it was for staffing, for hiring, and just never read the guidelines, which, of course, is one of our not-so-great mistakes that happens with any application period, even if you're not going to go after it, is not reading the guidelines to see what's possible. And there are a lot of possibilities there. Certainly, it's having more volunteers and more cost-effective, but, of course, it will not score as high as a hiring project because we're looking at guaranteed response. And, obviously, someone paid sitting in the station versus you know, having a lot of members that have to rely on paging, we're not sure. I mean, I'm a volunteer myself. None of us are, you know, as volunteers are available 24/7. So, paid staffing does score higher, but certainly there's things we can do to maybe possibly delay the point where we have to take on that burden in our local area. Eventually, all volunteers probably going to go away because call volume and population will just dictate that, volunteers won't be able to support, our full-time jobs and our families along with, handling duties at the fire department. It happens. I don't think it'll happen in our lifetime, but in the meantime, we can take advantage of some projects to help delay that a little bit and, ease the burden on our taxpayers before we take the step to paid personnel or expanding that. Fire prevention is going to come around again. Fortunately, fire prevention funding is tied to the main AFG program. So we had about $35 million or so for the 2010 program. That's going to drop more like $28 million, I believe. It's going to go to fire prevention for this year. And then it is a tough sell. Any organization that has the safety of the public with health and fire and safety related hazards can apply for funding, which is why we see National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, Home Sprinkler Coalition, some of the universities, fire marshals and state associations getting awards because they're doing large scale projects that tend to benefit really large areas. And in terms of cost benefit calculations, especially with the national organizations, you're looking at upwards of a few million people, if not the entire country, worth of 300 million people. So it is hard to compete against that in terms of numbers. That's why every year it's approximately 12 to 15 awards tend to take half the money, award money, out of fire prevention. There are some individual department applications that go through, of course, but that's why we tend to take advantage. We tell people to go out and bid, make sure you're still getting something that meet your expectations in terms of equipment, but the regular AFG equipment grants allow, if you have funding left over after completing your project, you can use 5,000 excess funds if you want to extend it and buy other equipment, or you can use that for fire prevention projects, whether it be laptops and projectors to help go teach classes, software, robots, the fire extinguisher trainers, depending on how much people have left, even a step in the right direction of, a few smoke detectors here and there, or even, coloring books for the kids. Anytime you've got money left over, it's never wasted on fire prevention. We can never do enough of that. And as you said before, when the economy goes down and money's tight, fire prevention and training are the two that are cut first, so it's certainly something we can take advantage of if we have the money left over.
Okay, then the future of the AFG program, you follow this very, very thoroughly for us. What are we looking at as far as this is the last year? How do we proceed to make sure the funding is available in the future?
Well, it is technically the last year by the current law governing AFG. The reason the money's gone up and down every year is that by the first two versions of the laws, first one that gave us the program in 2001 and then a renewal that was passed in 2004, the money they allocate has to be chosen every single year. They have to come to an amount. The White House has to approve it or recommend it, and then it's got to all get signed into the budget. The legislation from 2004 expires with the 2010 program. So technically, by the current law, there is no 2011 application period for any of these programs. The initial renewal legislation has passed the House. It got passed pretty resoundingly, 404-31, I believe, was the final vote. The only 31 against it, based on reputation, are the diehard balanced budget politicians, which there's nothing wrong with that either. But you know, certainly, my own personal view, if the money's going to go out somewhere, it's better to keep it, you know, in our country, and certainly, you know, benefit the fire service on that side. So it's usually bipartisan support. It's going over to the Senate. Of course, they're, you know, been working on the health care bill and some other issues in the meantime, so it hasn't come up yet. But the recommendation was for the 2011 through 2014 application periods, full $1 billion to AFG and $1.2 billion to SAFER. You know, my personal on that, especially since the fire station grant was pushed through kind of quickly, there were a lot of misunderstandings about the requirements that they had. A lot of people thought that applicants had to have full sets of drawings from engineers, and they cost anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000, and people just didn't have that money either. Ends up, as we talked about before, in articles and other podcasts, that the only real requirement they had was that the applicant owned the land where they wanted to build the station, or obviously own the land if they were renovating a station, and own enough land to do the renovation in line with local code. They only got 6,000 applications because of it, and that was $9 billion in requests for only $210 million. So it was certainly a very, very tight program. SAFER, as I did mention a little earlier in this podcast, a lot of municipalities are not giving their departments permission to apply. They, again, want to look for a long-term solution to staffing. And when they look at it and they decide, well, maybe this is only going to be a two-year delay of a layoff, or, you know, they're vacant now, they're going to be vacant day one, year three, because we can't afford to take on the positions again, they just don't want to undertake the federal government oversight. And there were a lot of restrictions that went into the new SAFER program, where you couldn't change your staffing, or, you know, there was a hardship clause that if cuts had to be made from the department after taking the SAFER award, cuts had to come across all departments. So a department that took a SAFER award, you know, hired 10 vacant positions in the fire department, suddenly had another major business close or some issue where they had to drop their staffing down the fire department. The SAFER regulations said they also had to drop staffing in other city departments to also cut costs. The fire department just couldn't be the whipping post for trying to save money continually. And a lot of cities had issues with their other, you know, the streets department or police department or others that didn't, you know, they didn't want to lose funding for another department, for the fire department having to take that award. So the applications were down. It was barely over 300 million requested. And some of the conversations I've had with some DHS officials and others, they're not sure they're going to get enough applications to cover the 420 million in the 2009 or 2010 program. So essentially, it's not being used. We do it. We fund a lot of SAFER applications. We only had two hiring that didn't get funded last year that we did out of the three or four dozen, I forget the number, from the 2008 program. It's a good thing for growing departments. It's a good thing, if there's a temporary situation, but, the national economy being down and not going to come back no matter who's in office or who's in Congress, it's just the nature of an economy. It's not going to recover quickly. It's not essentially not a full long-term solution. If the economy is going to bounce back in an area, certainly it's a good thing. But if the money's not going to be fully used, a lot of departments are dealing with, thousands upon thousands of dollars in building repairs. Utility costs are going right out the windows, literally, because, some stations might be missing windows or, especially in the northern part of the country, you've got stations built, late 1800s, early 1900s, far from energy efficient. So utility bills are through the roof. And that's one of the things we look at, just like a department going after a truck grant. If you're spending $20,000 to keep a truck on the road, and you got a new truck that's only $2,000 in preventative maintenance, well, you just saved $18,000 of budgeted money. If a new station would help save tens of thousands of dollars every single year, that would help beef up staffing and be a, you know, a long-term staffing solution, being more efficient with what budget money they have. So my own personal thought is if we could, you know, get the fire station grants renewed, one, because it's a huge need, two, because there was such a misunderstanding because the program was a little rushed on the way through. They did a lot in a short period of time to get it out, but, you know, a lot of the questions remained with it. So SAFER has its place. You know, it's certainly needed for the growing departments and certainly the recovery, you know, the rehires. I says it was a good thing to include to get people back to work and help recover the local economy. But a long-term solution, I don't think it needs, just based on historical demand, $1.2 million. You know, maybe you ought to look at, you know, put half of that to SAFER and half of that to fire station, or, you know, let's take the $2.2 billion between the two programs and, you know, make every single one of them $700 million, you know, and put it that way. The station grants are certainly a huge need. Even the largest departments are trying to expand that have taken over areas. And the station, you know, just like somebody buying a home, is the most expensive undertaking as a single capital investment that any department's going to have. So,
absolutely.
We definitely need the station grants to come back again. I want to encourage everybody to, you know, talk to their representatives and not, you know, talk down any of the other programs. It's just a simple statistics. All four programs are needed, the AFG, Fire Prevention, SAFER, and Station Grants. And, you know, we don't want to pit one program against the other. You know, we need them all. Like I said, it's better than, you know, irrigation projects overseas. You know, not that it's not needed, and, you know, the U.S. always helps. You know, we've always helped out other countries, but, you know, in our time of need, we ought to keep as much as we can back in this country.
Well, it all comes down to affecting the responsibilities and or capabilities of the first responders, and all four programs play their, you know, their own role, but together really help the department do its job, or the departments do their jobs across the country. So, we'll put some links to fire grant support, maybe some information on how to contact your local representatives as well, to kind of prod them along to make sure that the grant programs continue at full funding. And is there anything else we missed, Brian, before we wrap up this show?
No, I just want to encourage everybody to get out there. You know, it's a lot of people, the denial wounds from 2009 AFG are kind of fresh. They usually do them incrementally, but they all came flying in at once. You know, so it is discouraging to get turned down, but, you know, it's still, the program's there. It's available. We had a lot of people that got turned down very quickly last year that came back around and funded very, very early this year. It's
okay.
You know, you got to be in the game to be able to take home some prize.
So it was New York State Lottery. You got to be in it to win it. So, okay, Brian, again, thank you very much. We'll also put a link to your website as well. If anybody's looking for assistance, you can contact Brian. And again, a great thank you to Air Vacuum Corporation for sponsoring this podcast, as well as Part 2, which we'll be posting on radio@firehouse.com here shortly, or in the next couple of days. Part 2... it features various departments from across the country who have been awarded or at least one grant. Most of them have been awarded more than one grant. So make sure you listen to that. They also provide some information from their department on how they were able to secure the funding. So, Brian, thank you. AirVac Corporation, thank you for the sponsorship. And don't forget to apply. We have just about a month to get your applications in.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.